Pierre-Luc Dubois comes in with a backhanded shot, and he scores! Give me a little PLD! Pierre-Luc Dubois, forehand to backhand and back of the net.
Welcome back, Jackets fans. The Eldorado Gaming Scioto Downs Blue Jackets Radio Network presents the Blue Jackets Play-In Preview Show. Presented by your local Mercedes-Benz dealers. Here with an in-depth look at the Jackets' upcoming series against the Toronto Maple Leafs are Bob McGilligan, Jeff Remmer, Jody Shelley, and Jean-Luc Grandpierre.
6 days. That's all that remains before the Blue Jackets return to the NHL postseason. They will take on the Toronto Maple Leafs in a best-of-five play-in series that will start on Sunday night at 8 o'clock. We're going to break this series down for you just about every which way you can imagine. So without further ado, let's get it going. Well, guys, there are so many facets to this playoff series, this play-in series, if you will, between the Blue Jackets and the Toronto Maple Leafs, and we're going to break it down in all aspects of the game. Let's start with the forwards and how they are going to match up and who needs to be a big performer. And as we talk about the offense of this series is being brought to you by Nationwide, proud to be a championship partner of your Columbus Blue Jackets. Nationwide is on your side. Start with you, Jody, because you were the NHL forward in this group. For the Blue Jackets, they've had trouble scoring this year. And actually, you can go back several years. They lost a lot of that scoring skill last offseason. Who are some of the guys that have to step up, take it to another level if they really want to have a chance to win this play-in series against the Maple Leafs?
Well, Bob, I'm glad you started with me because I'm a former NHL forward. Now, when it comes to scoring and being a forward, I'm more of a better analyst when it comes to talking about that. So I appreciate that. Everyone wants to match this up as the skill of the Maple Leafs versus the will of the Columbus Blue Jackets. But if the Blue Jackets want to win this series, some of their skill has got to really take advantage of opportunities that they're going to get. They're going to get opportunities. And for me, two of the center icemen that stick out are Pierre-Luc Dubois, who for me has had an okay camp to this point. Now, he's a young guy. He's an emotional guy. I think that the spark will be lit for this guy in game one against Matthews, a guy that was two picks ahead of him in the draft, a guy that he wants to take down. I love the way how he got under the skin of Tampa last year. When you can get key players off kilter and out of their comfort zone, and Pierre-Luc Dubois does all kinds of subtle things away from the puck, extra bumps after the whistle. He's good and tight. He's hard to play against. For me, he's a key one. And look, at Kucherov gets suspended, I think Dubois had a lot to do with that last year. And the other key for me up front in the forward core is a guy who expectations for have really, we've dropped them, Bob, on Alexander Wenberg. He's settled in as a safe playing, reliable, almost sometimes I think, could he be a good defenseman? I mean, that's the way he plays the game. I think he is closer to the net. He's better and more reliable, makes great subtle plays. But Wenberg forced me to notice he got on his line. I really think that with Texie and Bemstrom, they might have found something there. And Wenberg could be a key factor. You know, everyone's going to talk about Jenner in that line and how they're going to try to shut things down. Dubois is going to be a big focus for the Leafs. Wenberg is a guy who might have a little more room, and he's got to be a key factor, really to lead the way. Because I think we've done way too much of waiting and seeing and wondering what this guy's going to do. The first thing everyone says about him is he has to shoot more. I think we're sick of saying that, and I think we need to be done with saying that. I think Wenberg's sick of hearing it, and everyone's sick of hearing it. I think this guy's got an opportunity to play impactful hockey right away, and he has got to be a key factor.
When you mentioned Dubois getting under the skin of the opposition like he did last year, another guy that was really good at that was Josh Anderson, who is not – well, he could be a part of this. He's on the roster. He's going there. But if he's not there, which is expected, is there going to be more responsibility for Pierre-Luc Dubois in that role?
I think so. I think he's going to need some help. I don't know what Foodie can bring. I don't know what Robinson can bring, but their speed can surprise people on the forecheck. And it's not always the physical play. It's taking away time and space. Anytime you get the puck, you have a responsibility to your teammates to manage the puck, keep the play alive, and keep the play moving forward. I think guys like that, guys with speed, guys that have jump, they need to fill that role because Anderson played a key role physically. But I think his speed on the forecheck, which is a Blue Jackets lifeline, I think the speed on the forecheck surprises the defenseman And that's going to be a key in this series, to jump and take away time and space. Because you know all those D-men want to do is get the puck to the offensive players and let them go to work. So I think Foodie, if he's in the lineup, and Robinson need to up that game and surprise people.
Jean-Luc, as Jody was talking about Alexander Wenberg, you and I called that last scrimmage, which was on Friday before the team left to go to Toronto. And Alexander Wenberg, Emil Bemström, and Alexander Texier were really good. Now, I understand it's a scrimmage. There's no doubt about that. But Wenberg was shooting the puck. He had a goal. He was setting things up. And what we're hoping is that that's going to be something that we see a little bit more of. And maybe if those lines stay intact, that's a line that could surprise some people.
It definitely could, Bob. And yes, Alexander Wenberg, like Jody just mentioned, look really good once they brought Texier down to that line. And what I like about this combination is you have Wenberg in the middle. We just talked about it. Doesn't like to shoot the puck much. He likes to distribute. And we all heard about Emil Bemström likes to shoot the puck. And same thing with Texier. So he's got two perfect wingers right now where he can dish the puck. Seems like they have good chemistry. And it could bring up some nice goals for the Blue Jackets in the series. And we all know it's going to be key.
How do you see that line? If things, so again, if things stay the way that they were in the last couple of practices, is the Wenberg line the second line? Is it ahead of the Boone Jenner, Gus Nyquist, Cam Atkinson line, which is obviously a very veteran line? Or do you slot them in as a third line? Or does it even matter? Because when John Tortorella has the team going the way he wants it to go, lines one through four, it doesn't matter what they are in any given shift.
So, yes, obviously I would say the Nash, Robinson, Foodie would probably be slated the fourth, but the first, second, and third are pretty even. And honestly, Bob, I would not be surprised. Now, again, I'm basing this off of the scrimmage, which doesn't mean anything, but I would not be surprised to see Eric Robinson being elevated to another line just because of the amount of speed he brought in the scrimmage. And let's not kid ourselves. He finished a few nice goals where I was even surprised myself and probably surprised himself. And I'm sure that opened some eyes in the coaching staff.
Hey, Jeff, let's take that a step further. I've said this before, and I don't mean it as any disrespect to Eric Robinson, but as he develops as a young player, I think he's kind of a poor man's Josh Anderson. He's a big guy. He's got incredible speed. The hands aren't the same. Obviously, Josh had 27 goals last year. But, you know, do you agree with that assessment? Could he be a factor?
I think he can be a factor. I think that those hands are catching up to those feet right now. I think we saw evidence of that certainly during the scrimmages and during training camp 2.0 overall. I think he's an important guy. And whether he's on the fourth line or, as Jean-Luc says, perhaps moves up, I think that he could be another key guy to provide some offense. And as you started the roundtable, the Blue Jackets are looking for offense after a season in which they struggled to score goals.
And they're talking about speed. That's all we've talked about is speed. John Tortorella says that he wants speed in his lineup. That's why Liam Foodie is not only here, but it looks like he's going to get a chance to have a role at the beginning of this series. And after that, it's going to be up to him on how he performs. And Jeff, that speed is important for the Blue Jackets because on the other side, they have a plethora of it. I mean, there's going to be guys, and this is similar to Tampa last year, where it's going to be wave after wave of players that have great offensive skill, but these guys can fly.
Well, let me say, yes, the Blue Jackets certainly were tested against Tampa with their offense, but I believe there's more offense on this Toronto team. They were right behind Tampa in goals scored on the season. They finished tied for fourth in the power play, and just look how deep they are offensively. Obviously, there's the big three, Marner, Tavares, and Matthews. But Nylander showed last season and in the camp for Toronto from all the reports that we've read that he has had an outstanding camp offensively. Then they've got a couple of other guys. Mikhaev is a player from Russia that sliced his tendon on his wrist, was lost since December. He's had an outstanding camp, again, according to the reports. And they've got this kid out of junior who played for the Peterborough Petes, longtime junior franchise, Nick Robertson, who's going to be given an opportunity to play. He's on the smaller side, but he can scoot, and he also can provide some of that offense when it's not the other guys producing. But they are loaded. Defensively, certainly another story, and we can talk about that later, but they will score goals. They average almost 3.5 per game. As I said, they're one of the highest scoring teams in the Eastern Conference, and the Blue Jackets are going to have to find a way to shut that down.
Jody, you love to talk about taking away the cross-ice pass against very talented teams, disrupting their flow and all of that. How big of a key is that going to be for the Blue Jackets in this series against Toronto to try to take that away, to try to force them to adjust and to frustrate them?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Jeff's buying into all the hype with the Leafs, and I get it. I mean, they got some good speed and good talent, and, you know, those are great points, but they've got to feed off what they did last year against Tampa. And, you know, you think that going right at the Leafs is the approach, but it's not, because sometimes good players want you to come right at them because then they can use your speed to make their moves around you. So it's tactful. You'll see the Blue Jackets at times back off, and it's usually when the player, the defenseman behind the net, has the puck and everything is kind of slowed down. It's called a controlled breakout. That's when you'll see the Blue Jackets forecheck back out and wait. And it'll be the first forward will be right at the blue line, so the Leafs blue line, and then two forwards at the dots and two forwards at the dot line at the blue line, setting up like a little triangle trap. And what that does is it keeps all the players tight. So if you stretch those players out, you're going to have those cross-ice passing lanes that the Leafs want. They want to fly fast, like Jeff said about their speed. They want to make the cross-ice passes and get the Blue Jackets playing outside of the dots. And then they'll find the holes and they'll hurt you. So you're right. I like to talk about it a lot, but it's what we see in practice. They keep it compact. They keep all those players tightened together. They kind of hold in that formation and keep the play to the outside. And as it gets closer to the net and in the zone, they try to squeeze it off or let it die in a corner or an area that's not a threat. So they'll stick with that game plan. It's a smart game plan. I just hope they don't get over anxious at times and try to chase things around. I think in this environment without fans, I think it'll be easier for the Blue Jackets to stay in their structure, because sometimes you'll hear the oohs and ahs, the roars, and you'll get scattered out of position. Look for them to really focus on doing that and staying and keeping that everything compact, and that'll take away a bit of the speed, because when you make a good pass, that keeps the speed. And when the Blue Jackets are able to slow that down a little bit, the guy with speed's got to stop, come back to the puck. Now you've killed that initial rush.
So that's how we see the forwards on each team going head-to-head. Coming up next, we'll go back to the blue line and talk about the defense. But right now, I want to tell you about Mercedes-Benz, because the wait is over. The Mercedes-Benz summer event is here. Go to mbusa.com/summer-event to learn more about the Mercedes-Benz GLA and to schedule a private showroom appointment at your local Mercedes-Benz dealership. The Blue Jackets playoff preview show, presented by Mercedes-Benz, continues right after this on the Eldorado Scioto Downs Blue Jackets Radio Network. Welcome back to the Blue Jackets playoff preview show, presented by Mercedes-Benz, and hail, hail, the gang's all here. I'm Bob McElligott, joined by Jody Shelley, Jean-Luc Grandpierre, and Jeff Rimmer. Time now to talk about the defensive matchups in this play-in series between the Blue Jackets and the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's being brought to you by Huntington. We're for people, for who they are and who they could become. Welcome. So, Jean-Luc, let's let you start off with this, because you were the defenseman in the National Hockey League. You see, I put a lot of thought and time and effort into setting all of this stuff up here. But for the Blue Jackets, it begins and ends with Seth Jones. He's back in the lineup. He's healthy. He's their number one guy. I think he's their number one overall guy. But on defense, there's absolutely no question about that. Just the fact that he's going to be out there gives the Blue Jackets a big edge, right?
Big edge, and we talked about it over and over how much we miss Seth Jones for the limited time he was out before, you know, the league shut down. This is a guy that brings stability to not only to the team, but to Zach Werenski as well. You know, Zach is comfortable with them. They can go D to D with their eyes closed. They know where they're going to be on the ice at all time. He's extremely, extremely good with a stick. So defensively, he breaks up a lot of plays. And the key with him, he not only breaks them, but he creates great transition. As a forward, when you see Seth Jones on the ice, you know he's going to cut the play and get ready to skate up ice, because it's going to be around your tape. He can skate well, and he's looked great in that limited camp that the Jackets had so far. It doesn't look like he missed a beat. So that ankle is fully recovered. He got his speed back, got his swagger back. So it's a big, big plus for the Blue Jackets.
Yeah, I like what you said about Seth and Zach Werenski, because as good as Zach was this year, and he was really good, obviously, with 20 goals, without Seth there as that anchor on his pair, you saw him try to do maybe a little bit too much in different games, and now he can go back to just being himself. He can jump up on the rush and feel good about it. So that's going to be key. And Toronto having all of the offense that they have, how great is it, John Luke, to have a shutdown defensive pair? Because you know, at the end of the day, David Savard and Vladislav Gavrikov are going to be out there blocking shots and being in the face of those guys, making it tough on them.
Yes. So you get your first pair of Jones and Werenski, and they almost look like ice capades out there. They're so, you know, they're effortless skaters. They look great doing it. Everything looks easy. And then you get the Gavrikov, Savard line, and these two, a little more hard hat. They like to hit. They like to lay the body. It's not always pretty, but it works well. These guys will do anything to keep the puck out of their net. And the chemistry these two have been able to get throughout the season is incredible. And honestly, probably one of the best shutdown pair of defensemen in the league as well.
Jeff, when it gets beyond those two pair, that's where the questions begin for the Blue Jackets. And the biggest question is Ryan Murray, playing or not playing? We saw him in camp. We saw him not playing in camp. Obviously, that's going to be huge for the Blue Jackets because Ryan Murray, when fully healthy, is not a third-pair defenseman. He is more than that. In this case, it looks like he's going to be one. What an incredible asset that is to have that kind of a puck mover. And then who plays alongside him? Marcus Nuttavaara struggled throughout the year. Dean Kukin was very good and suffered a major injury. He is now back and healthy. That's where the questions reside for the Blue Jackets on defense, is who's going to be on that third pair.
And I hope we see a healthy Ryan Murray. He certainly seemed to be upbeat when he was on the ice. And you're right, he missed a few days of practice and a scrimmage. But when he was there, he was certainly effective. He's the best passer from the blue line, getting that first pass out of the zone. Coach Tortorella's talked about that numerous times. The interesting thing for me is, who is Murray if he's healthy? And let's hope he is. Who is he going to be paired with? You mentioned Kukin as well. Certainly a situation. Harrington's been in that spot. But for me, if he wants to go with that left-right combination, I would think that Andrew Peak would have a shot. Now, Peak, maybe it's a little bit too rich against the Toronto team, but he certainly held his own when given an opportunity to play, what with all the injuries on the blue line last season.
Yeah, and I understand where you're coming from there. I mean, I think Dean Kukin surprised, well, maybe that's not a fair word because they've thought a lot of him within the organization. I think he surprised us when Zach Werenski went out and he got put on the top pair with Seth Jones and they didn't miss a beat and he looked fine there. That was a bit of a big surprise. But also, Jeff, they did have Kukin running one of the power play units during the practices. So it seems that that's a pretty good indication they expect him to be in this thing.
Yeah, he's a sneaky offensive guy. He's got a great shot from the point. We saw evidence of that when he was healthy last season. He also moves the puck effectively up ice. As I said, if you're not going to go with that left-right, and who knows, if Murray is unable to play every game, does Kukin slide over to the left side, and then does that give an opportunity to somebody else on the right side, Peak, Harrington, whomever? There's Clendenning as well that certainly got some playoff experience against Tampa last year. He's on the squad, and he's certainly available and has experience.
Don't forget Gabriel Carlson. Heck, he played against the Penguins a couple of years ago. He's fallen off since then, although he did play some games this year. And then again, who didn't play some games this year on this team? But he's there as well. Jody, when it comes to the Toronto Maple Leafs, and Jeff alluded to this earlier, this is where there is some question on their blue line. I don't think there's any question the Blue Jackets have the stronger of the two blue lines. How is this going to factor in this series?
Well, I think, as I mentioned earlier, the Leafs, their D, want to get out of their zone as quick as they can. They want to play in the offensive zone. The Leafs have the highest possession number as far as time with the puck in the offensive zone, and they want to keep that going. They want to play offense. They want to play all the time, and it starts with defense. I think the commitment from their forwards is going to be a little better. I know Sheldon Keefe, the coach there, has finally had a training camp. He's trying to get these guys to do a few more details in their own end to get them to understand that that's when you get to go play offense. It's not going to be all on the D. But in saying that, it's going to be a key factor, and it's what the Blue Jackets have to go after on their forecheck. Their identity for the Blue Jackets is the forecheck, and also their engine is the D, meaning they have mobile, smart D-men who get the green light to go whenever they want. Because the system they play, the high forward covers to the D-men, it's automatic, and that allows the D-men to go without hesitation and get the jump on the opposition. So for me, yeah, you can look at the clientele for the Toronto Maple Leafs. You know, they've got Morgan Riley back and healthy. He's a mobile guy who I think has something to prove. And there's a lot of negative conversation around him, but he's paired with CeCe, and I like the pickup from CeCe. I think we've had this conversation before, Bob. He's built for the playoffs. Playoffs is when guys who are that are on the back end, big, strong, and they play with a guy that's mobile like that. They take up a lot of space. They cause a lot of problems. And if they play in the right system, they're going to be effective with their simplicity. I really think that. I also like Muzzin for them. Muzzin is a player they picked up. He's a guy that reminds me of Savard, not only because of the great beard, because he's a guy that, you know, he gets the puck moving, but he also does the dirty stuff and the gritty stuff. So, they're a tough team to play against with as far as they want to play offense. But I think their D are now going to have a different focus, and I think that's a smart move for their team. For the Blue Jackets, like I said, it's their engine. They have got to play without hesitation. I do wonder about Seth Jones a little bit. I know John Luke brought up some great points, and he's 100% right. But when you come back from an injury and you haven't played in a while, there's a little hesitation on that injury sometimes. I hope I'm just being extra cautious in what I say, but realistically, is he ready to play the big minutes against the top players, defend, play offense, and everything on that ankle after having, you know, some rehab time on his own and a short training camp and then getting right into this? We'll see after the Boston scrimmage on Thursday. But it's one to be careful. I think there's slack to be picking up. And my concern, Bob, I know I'm getting long-winded. When you have a great player come back into your lineup, the Blue Jackets defenseman cannot exhale and be like, oh, he's back, Seth's going to take over. I think the opposite needs to happen when you come back from injury. I think everyone needs to be on point and ready to raise their level and take a little pressure off of Seth Jones. I really think that that's an important factor here.
Just to go back to the Leafs for a moment, you mentioned something. Sheldon Keefe had a training camp, and this season has lasted so long, it's very easy to forget that Mike Babcock was the coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and Sheldon Keefe came in.
The never-ending season.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. It seems like the season lasted 5 years. But you're right. He never had that first training camp. He was in the American Hockey League, so now he gets a chance to work with his guys. They're certainly familiar with him because he had a lot of games there. But could that be some advantage? He finally gets to work with his team without the daily rigors of having to go play a game?
You know what? I think that ideally, I think that's a great conversation to have. But when you think about it, yes, I think it really is. I think that, you know, it's one thing as a player. And John Luke, you and I went through a couple coaches in our career, mid-season changes. And you get excited. You look for the fresh voice. You know, you're upset that the coach from the past is gone. You had a good opportunity with him. Where do you stand with the new coach? What are his ideas? Players like Tyson Barrie, he's a player that's, you know, he came here from a different organization. He's the number one guy. Is he on the third pair with the Maple Leafs? So there's different opportunities, different mindset, but I think he's really focused on the top players of the Maple Leafs, and I think that's something that's new to this organization. I think Tavares is obviously the leader, but the stars are going to be played as stars. But I think they might get some more buy-in with Keith and this critical two-week camp. It sounds like he's been pretty good and engaged. So it's going to be very interesting. I think it is a big factor.
When we come back, we're going to focus on special teams as the Blue Jackets playoff preview show, presented by Mercedes-Benz, continues on the Eldorado Scioto Downs Blue Jackets Radio Network. Blue Jackets are getting set to take on the Toronto Maple Leafs in a play-in series. It is a best of five. There will be no margin for error for either team. All aspects of the game have got to be clicking. And let's talk about the special teams aspect right now, being brought to you by American Electric Power, a proud championship partner of our Columbus Blue Jackets. Together, our energy is boundless. And what a sponsor to start talking about special teams, because Jeff Rimmer, the power play for the Blue Jackets has been an Achilles heel. And this has gone on for the last couple of years. It's gotten to such a point where they even brought in Paul McClain to work with the power play, try to get it going. We've seen it in spurts. We have never seen it consistent over the course of the last three playoff seasons and even this year during the regular season. What's it going to take to get that power play to be a major factor to help the Blue Jackets here?
Well, as training camp 2.0 went on, we did see a difference. It has happened previously for a short period of time, but it looks like the Blue Jackets will start that series with the Toronto Maple Leafs with both Werenski and Seth Jones paired on the top unit. Now, does that make a difference? Certainly, they look like they can be more effective. Jones, of course, on the offside and looking to get that shot off. He got it off a couple of times, but he'd like to be a little more consistent on that left point, getting that shot through to the net. And hey, we all know the Blue Jackets have a tremendous penalty kill. If they could ever get the power play going against Toronto and whomever they meet, they can make some noise, and who knows, maybe they can run away with this when it's all said and done.
How long have you been sitting with that Stanley Cup model there, just waiting to show it off to everybody?
I had to pick the right spot to use it. But, hey, seriously, we know what the Blue Jackets can do on the penalty kill, but they've got to find a way, as you say, to get the power play going.
Actually, I'm impressed because I thought I was the only one that sat around for the last couple of days thinking about how we were going to do this show, but I can see that you were working your brain too.
Anytime, Bob.
Jody, Jeff was talking about that power play and the shots coming off the wall. Look, we went into this season knowing that it was going to struggle even more without an Artemi Panarin. Emil Bemstrom was a guy that was hyped up a lot during training camp. We saw it in the very first preseason game he scored on the power play. I think when it comes to Bemstrom, I think he's got a chance to be a good player. I think that he was really thrown into a situation that's a little bit too rich for him right now because he was great in Europe, but it takes time to adjust to the National Hockey League. But, it's players like that that have that type of skill and have that type of shot that have got to find a way to come through when it comes to the power play in this series. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree, and this is going to be at a premium. And you might not even see a power play, according to what some of the stats, because the Leafs never get a call for them. They never get power plays. They just never get calls to get the man advantage. That's their dialogue throughout the season. And we know the Blue Jackets don't take penalties. So what are we going to see? We're going to see some pretty good hockey, I guess, but it's going to be clean. When you do get on the power play, it's got to be, it's the same as timely saves with the goals. It can't be something that gets in the way. And sometimes I see the frustration from Atkinson, from Jenner, guys that get opportunities where you can't allow frustration to get in. The Blue Jackets have to understand that, you know what, it's not live and die by the power play. It's the penalty kill that they really got to focus on. Okay, when you do get out there, the work ethic, and this may sound way too basic, but the work ethic on the power play has got to, you have to outwork the penalty killers. And the penalty killers, it's strange, but when you're on the penalty kill, it's only four guys, but your routes are very, very defined and detailed. They break it down to just try to squeeze players off, get in shot lanes, protect and clear. It's like the mentality is so simple and hard work and paying the price that it's easier to buy in, I guess. So what I'm saying is, the Blue Jackets penalty kill has got to be on point and on point to frustrate. And if I'm on the power of the play of the Blue Jackets, go out and work hard and try to outwork the penalty kill of the Maple Leafs, but don't allow frustration to come in. It doesn't matter. It matters to a point, but it can't matter where it's going to affect the team and the rest of the game. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there's got to be a mentality there where you just got to chalk it up and move to the next one. I think sometimes in a long season, you can let your personal goals get in the way and you can get frustrated. In this format, move on and really let that penalty kill get out and out-frustrate the opposition.
And John Luke, to take that a step further, what Jody's saying is you really break it down. On the penalty kill, the Blue Jackets are very content to just be hardworking and boring. They're not looking if they get a chance to get a shorthanded breakaway, that's great. They'll take that opportunity. But it's not about creating that. It's just about doing your job. But when you talk about their power play, for a team that at times is offensively challenged, I think they're very guilty of trying to put in this perfect highlight reel goal and that they have gotten away, not just this year, but in previous years. I think they've really gotten away from that ugly park somebody in front of the net, dig it out of the pads and stuff it back through the five hole. We don't see those kind of goals out of them. And I think we should see more of them because they're trying to be too fancy, in my opinion. Do you agree?
I agree with you, Bob. And that's something that you will see from the power play units we saw in practice. Is that's what they brought the Nick Foligno's and the Boone Jenner's to put in front of the net to get away from the peripheral kind of play where you're passing the puck around, around, around. That's nice when you wait for an opportunity to open in the middle. But right now, I think they need to simplify thing. We saw Bemstrom on the point. It's like, let's go D to D, one-timers, create some traffic in front. We all know how key rebounds are going to be in this series as the goaltender is still adjusting to traffic. It's going to have to get ugly, simple, and hard work. And the hard work part, when you're a power play guy, naturally you're not going to work as hard as the PK guy because you have that confidence that, hey, there's one more of us. Let's take it easy. Believe it or not, I was a power play guy at one time in Europe, so that's the attitude I had. Then I was on the PK, and I was working so hard to make sure we could clear the puck. So it comes back to a mental attitude and something that the Jackets have to really take at heart to be able to be successful against Toronto.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that you were a power play guy and that you just let up a little bit because you had the extra guy, and then all of a sudden you wound up being a penalty kill guy, and that was the end of your power play time?
It's literally just like a switch, and I was doing all of it, Bob.
Toe drag. Saucer pass.
Jeff, as we're talking about the penalty kill and how important it's going to be, it really goes back to what we talked about with the Toronto offense. I mean, they're going to be able to throw five guys on the ice that every single one of them is dangerous. Make a mistake, and you're going to pay a price, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. What did they finish? Fourth, tied for fourth in the power play. I mean, the guy that they really have to key on, in my opinion, is Mitch Marner. I mean, we all know about Matthews, 40-some-odd goals. He's going after the Rocket Richard trophy. You have a situation, though, with Marner. That guy seems to find open ice. He's got eyes behind his head. He can make drop passes, knowing the guy's there. How he even figured the guy was right there behind him. He's the guy that they're going to have to key on. And obviously, they've got enough talent to have two power play units. I mean, whoever's on the first unit, obviously Marner, Tavares, Riley, Matthews. Then you got the second unit. You can have Mikhaev and as well Nylander. And that's a couple pretty good guys. And then Tyson Barrie on the point. So the Blue Jackets are going to have to be sharp. They're going to have to be very, very strong defensively, and they're going to face two highly regarded offensive units on the power play from Toronto's perspective.
Jody, special teams, as you said, maybe they'll be a factor, maybe they won't be a factor, but in the early part of this series, with everybody not playing for over 4 months, almost 5 months, one thing we see at the beginning of the regular season is we usually see a lot of mistakes, and we see a lot of officials calling those mistakes. Do you think this is going to be similar to that?
I think so. I think it's going to be – everyone's eager to get out there. The officials want to get out there. You know, when you think of the power play and the sloppiness of some of those plays, penalty kill's got to be tight right away. And, you know, like Jeff just said, you give that group with that kind of depth and scoring and skill time and space. And that means – I mean, I'm talking about 1 foot the other way where you should be – you know, the opposite way, they can exploit that. So it's an attitude, it's attention to detail in the penalty kill, and to say the opposite, right? I mean, with any opportunity, I don't care what it is, if it's an odd man break, if it's a rebound chance in front of the net, power player 5-on-5, whether it's a goaltender having an opportunity to make a save, it basically comes down to any advantage or opportunity you have. You have to take advantage offensively, and then defensively, you have to take it away. It's that simple. I know that's very simplistic, but that's what it's going to come down to here in playoff hockey.
Well, when I want to get it down to the simple things, I know to always come to you. Thank you.
Yeah, I keep it, you know what I mean.
Oh, I know exactly what you mean. Believe me. We have covered everything now except the goaltending, and we're going to do that next as the Blue Jackets playoff preview show presented by Mercedes-Benz continues on the Eldorado Gaming Scioto Downs Blue Jackets Radio Network. Blue Jackets and the Toronto Maple Leafs, a play-in series, best of five, winner moves on, loser goes home, coming out of a 4.5-month break. That's what it is like for all of these teams that are involved in the Stanley Cup playoff tournament. Let's talk about the goaltending matchup in this series. It's being brought to you by Ohio Health, trusted care focused on safety. And for the goaltenders, the Blue Jackets come into this year without Sergei Bobrovsky in net in the playoffs. Jonas Korpisalo and Elvis Merzlikins did a tremendous job throughout the course of the regular season. Everybody knows the story. Korpisalo got the start, earned a bid to the NHL All-Star game, got injured the day before his appointment was announced. Merzlikins had to come in, was 0-7 at the time, and didn't look like he could win an NHL game at that point. And lo and behold, he went on a terrific run and kept the team right in it, helped them to better their position. And when Korpisalo came back, Merzlikins got hurt and went out of the lineup. So neither of these guys has really, for the most part, been healthy at the same time and been available, but they are now. So with this, let's talk about what we saw in the training camp, because I know there were many stories written about the number of goals that Jonas Korpisalo gave up as opposed to Elvis Merzlikins, to which I say, who cares? But in that last scrimmage, Elvis gave up 10, Korpi gave up 5. Take that for what you want. Again, I don't think it really matters. I think what's going to matter is going into this game on Thursday against the Boston Bruins, who's going to perform in that? Because that's going to be kind of the final dress rehearsal for John Tortorella. What I think personally is Korpisalo had a chance to start the season. He was the veteran guy. He had the trust. I don't see him not getting the chance to start this thing, but I'm not saying he's going to stay there. Look what happened to him a couple of years ago in the Calder Cup playoffs. He got the nod in game one. He didn't get the job done. Anton Forsberg came in, never gave him the net back the rest of the way. So that's the kind of situation I think it's going to be. I know a lot of people are, you know, hands down, Elvis is going to go. I don't think that, but then again, I don't know. Jean-Luc Grandpierre, you moonlight as a goaltender in adult leagues, so I'm going to let you talk about this first. How do you see these two guys and how they might be used?
Again, this is the unknown. I think it's going to come down to that game, against Boston next Thursday, and this is something that I think the coaching staff, obviously goalie coach, is going to take a look at it and see who looks sharper. I don't think it comes down necessarily how many goals they give or gave during camp. It's really going to be, what are they seeing? How's your rebound control? How are you looking around traffic? Are you looking comfortable? Because based on number alone, technically the Blue Jackets would put Elvis Merzlikins in that. But then you have to remember, what about the experience? There's so many tangibles that it's going to be a really, really hard decision. The good news again for the Blue Jackets is if they decide to start with Korpi or with Elvis and they don't like what they see, they'll make the switch early on. They have that luxury. Toronto, they do not have that luxury. If there's an injury or, you know, Anderson's not performing well, they're stuck keeping him in that.
And, Jeff, that's a good point where the Blue Jackets, you know, we've seen this in the past couple of years. Barry Trotz did it so well with the Islanders, utilizing two goaltenders, almost splitting the season. It could become the norm, but it's only the norm if you have two guys that can do the job. And the Blue Jackets have proven that they have two guys that can do the job and have done the job this year. And let's take that even a step further. They both want to play, so they're going to compete.
They have been competing, obviously, from the first day of camp. Now, if you go by the home net or the starting net throughout the scrimmages, throughout practices, it was Korpisalo there. And I really believe that going into camp 2.0, the idea was Korpisalo was going to be the starting goaltender, and on a short leash, Elvis comes in. But as the camp went on, we saw Elvis perhaps outperforming Korpisalo a bit. Now, you're right. And certainly Jean-Luc is right. It could come down to that Boston exhibition game before the final decision is made. But I ask this question. What about experience and the fact that Elvis, yes, this is his first playoff. This is for Korpisalo 1A as far as playoffs are concerned. But the fact that Elvis has played in world championships year after year after year, does he have a little more experience when the pressure's on the line? And does he get that little extra to get the starting nod in game number one? Just the thought doesn't necessarily mean that's the way it's going to happen. And on the flip side, Toronto, the feeling is that Frederik Anderson's got to play much better than he did during the course of the regular season. And he too, not unlike the Blue Jacket goaltenders, guilty of giving up a lot of goals. There may have been a theory and a method to the madness of Sheldon Keefe, because he had Anderson on one side. He loaded up all the offense on the other team in the scrimmages, and maybe the thought is, hey, you're facing the very best in what we have offensively. Now you're going to play the Blue Jackets. They don't have the prolific scores that we have, so maybe your game gets better. But don't underestimate Jack Campbell, a guy they acquired from the Los Angeles Kings. If Anderson continues to struggle, I wouldn't be surprised that Anderson is on a short leash and Campbell gets a chance to play.
So before we finish this up, let's talk about this whole setup. 12 teams in two hubs. Round robin teams, the top four teams are going to play a round robin tournament to determine their seeding. And, you know, I know there's been some teams are think they should just be in those spots and that's that and all that stuff. But this is a unique situation. It's a unique experience for everybody. It's a very unique experience for us. And let's start with that, Jeff, because, I mean, here we are in Columbus. We're going to call games off TV screens. You call a game on a TV screen every day, but you don't call it off the TV screen. You get to watch it. I mean, there are big adjustments for everybody, and we're certainly right in the middle of that.
Oh, absolutely. It's going to be a challenge. It's going to be something different. I have previously done arena football off a monitor, but I think that's a little bit easier than following the puck and what are we going to see and understand something else here, which is good and bad. Certainly, it's going to be advantageous, I believe, to my broadcast partner, Jody Shelley, and that is 32 cameras, 12 more than they've ever used on a hockey telecast previously. And does the director get a little excited and does he switch off cameras and perhaps get away from the play? We saw that when, if you remember, years ago, ESPN first started telecasting hockey, and they certainly went a different way. They tried to bring a new element to the game. This is going to be interesting, but obviously something I'm excited about. And hey, we're calling the Stanley Cup playoffs, and there's nothing better, in my opinion, in any sport than what we're looking at here starting on Sunday.
I'll tell you, the different angles that they're going to be on the radio broadcast are going to be outstanding as well. It's going to be just, you might not know what's happening. And I include me in that. John Luke, in the East, you look at the 12 teams, you know, obviously some are going to be eliminated in this play-in series, but who's your favorite in the Eastern Conference?
Favorite in the Eastern Conference, I don't think you can overlook the Boston Bruins. You look at that team defensively, they're great all year. Offensively, they still can score. They have the veteran presence, good goaltending. I think in the East, right now, if I were to pick a favorite, you know, everybody's talking about Tampa Bay again. I cannot overlook the team of veteran that is the Boston Bruins, personally.
Jody, over in the West, can you overlook the defending champions, the St. Louis Blues? And I know you like Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers, too, just on a regular basis. Can they make any kind of run? Who do you like in the West?
I like the Blues. I mean, they just got Tarasenko back. He's on a top line again with Shen. They've got, you know, usually when you win a Stanley Cup or you say you get disappointed like the Bruins did, which I like John Luke's pick in the East, you have to wait all summer. All training camp, all regular season, then you have to get back into it. These guys are healthy. These guys have something to prove. They've waited for this. They're in the bubble. And I think those teams will be the most prepared. The Bruins in the East, and I think the Blues in the West, they're fired up to get back at this and try to bring that cup back. And then the other team for me in the East is Washington. They're 1 year out. They want to have that party again. Everybody wants to have that party. But I think those guys can taste it, and they want it back.
All right, so there are some predictions for you. We broke down this entire series. It begins on Sunday. The Blue Jackets and the Toronto Maple Leafs, best of five. I'd like to thank Jody Shelley, Jean-Luc Grandpierre, and Jeff Rimmer for being with me tonight. This has been the Blue Jackets Playoff Preview Show, presented by Mercedes-Benz. I'm Bob McElligott saying so long on the Eldorado Gaming Scioto Downs Blue Jackets Radio Network.